What's up, Raider Nation? Matt Holder here from Silver and Black Pride to bring you another Behind Enemy Lines podcast. I've got my friend Michael Peterson from Bolts from the Blue, SB Nation site that covers the Los Angeles Chargers. Still, Michael, I got to admit to you, I still want to call him San Diego every single time. So glad to have you on. I'll have you help me keep me honest throughout this episode. But Michael, how are you doing?
Yeah, man? You and the rest of the country that want to keep calling him San Diego for being honest. Right? I think Matt Hasselbeck, like a day or two ago, said it on air as well. And the cast, I think it was like NFL Live or one of those shows, and they made him sit or get down and actually do push-ups because they're like, we have to call them by their real people. So if you screw up, you know, if you call them the Oakland Raiders again, Las Vegas right. now, you know, do that. Yeah. It's the weirdest thing, though, because the Rams going from St. Louis to Los Angeles, no one's calling the St. Louis Rams anymore. And I think, you know, obviously I think the Rams were Los Angeles before, correct? Right. So I get it, but at the same time, it just feels like the Chargers are the only one where people are actually struggling to do that.
I feel like part of it has to do with like you talk about the Rams moving from Missouri, like crossing like quite a few states to get to LA, whereas like the Chargers just move a couple hours north. Like it's like still in the same location, but even though obviously it's two completely different cities. Mm-hmm. But awesome, man. I always start these things off talking more generally. So I'm just curious, man, after three games, how are you feeling about the Chargers? I imagine you got to be feeling pretty good after beating the Chiefs in Arrowhead.
Yeah, no, that's, you know, that's where you want to beat the Chiefs, obviously. Like as good as the Chiefs have been, as dominant they've been, if you can choose anywhere to beat them, it would be in their home stadium to finally, like, you know, maybe shut up the fan base a little bit, you know, to finally have some form of bragging rights, because, you know, all these teams, Raiders, Broncos, Chargers, are tired of being not first place in the division or even feeling like they even have a chance. But yeah, so that was absolutely huge. You really can't understate that. You know, through three games, I couldn't be happier, to be honest. I think 2-1 through the first three was kind of what we were hoping for. 3-2 through the first five as well was kind of the threshold people thought, like if they could get there through those, like, because it's the tough gauntlet, right? Besides, right. you know, the Chiefs this week. I mean, we've got, obviously, you guys are 3-0, the Raiders, we've got Browns and Ravens coming up subsequent weeks. So, I mean, this is a tough gauntlet. But 2-1 is phenomenal. You could say some bad calls against the Cowboys are, you know, the difference between this team being 3-0 and not, and that'd be an even better storyline for this game coming up. But overall, this team is doing everything that I would say Brandon Staley kind of from the very beginning said that they were going to do. They're going to play like analytical based, progressive, aggressive, not reckless football. I mean, all these things that Staley has preached since he got hired, which has been super refreshing coming from a coach like Anthony Lynn, who was still pretty old school, kind of set in his ways, right. you know, type of coaching, to get a young guy. So like, you know, a defensive, version of Sean McVay. That's kind of what Staley is. Obviously, he comes from that tree, so it's right. no surprise that he is that type of person. But they just seem to be on the ball about everything. And I should say almost everything because of these illegal shift penalties that keep happening. And I think they've taken two or three touchdowns off the board. I mean, it's kind of insane.
Yeah.
But it's such a small, specific problem that it only makes it more excruciating to see on the field, because you're like, no other team is screwing up this way. No other team is blowing leads or, you know, getting touchdowns taken off because of something that should be this, you know, Pop Warner type football-esque type of rule, right? Thing that you have down. So overall though, 2-1 is great. Offense, you know, had some red zone woes that kind of got that fixed. I think against the Chiefs, you saw what this team wants to be going forward. And I think that's a really good thing. And they picked a really good game for them to kind of figure out those issues and kind of find that identity ahead of, again, a couple more really strong opponents coming up here in the next few weeks.
Awesome. Yeah. So I'm curious, man, what do you think their chances are at winning the division? And then if we remove the Chiefs from the equation, because, I mean, I think they're the obvious, as, you know, the reigning AFC mm-hmm. or two-time AFC champions, you know, who do you think poses the biggest threat to the Chargers between the Raiders and the Broncos? And obviously on that, you know, what do you think the Chargers' chances are at winning the division?
Yeah, so obviously I think that's a good way to put it, is if you just don't have the Chiefs, because no matter how bad they seem to be right now or just struggling, they're still the Chiefs.
They're not going to stay in fourth place for long.
Right, they're right. very much not going to do that. There's going to be some movement. So when you look at this Raiders and Broncos team, I mean, first and foremost, this division has always been tough. And even though the Chiefs have won it for quite some time now, you know, they lose some games to the Raiders, the Broncos, the Chargers. Like, everyone plays each other close. Right. And I think that's why this is probably, I think, the most competitive division behind the NFC West. Because it just seems like anyone can win at any point, any given Sunday, you know that saying. So this year, you look at the Raiders, they're passing the ball really well, right? Like it's not something that I would have projected. I thought after blowing up the offensive line that, you know, I knew the run game was going to suffer. And then inherently I thought the passing game was going to suffer because they're not going to be able to protect Derek Carr as well, but they're really proving people wrong on offense. And then defensively, I think they're surprising as well. Us Chargers fans having just gotten rid of Gus Bradley and then you guys snatching him up and kind of running the same defense, we expected kind of similar results just because we saw what it did for us, having talent year in and year out, and it just wasn't getting the job done. So we just did not expect things to all of a sudden flip just because he's now with a new team. But so far through three games, he's played really well. He's called some really good games. So that's, you know, we can't take the Raiders lightly, and I'm sure we'll talk about the matchup later in this podcast. But then going over the Broncos again, Vic Fangio, right? Defensive minded coach. Brandon Staley came from his coaching tree as well before he went to the Rams. The guy knows his stuff, right? He helped the Bears with Mitch Trubisky at quarterback. You know, as the defensive coordinator, Fangio did this. Their defense was so elite that they took Mitch Trubisky to the playoffs. Absolutely insane. And so you got to respect there. They have enough talent offensively as well to surprise people. Teddy Bridgewater is not an exciting quarterback, but they've got Cortland Sutton. KJ Hamler is unfortunately hurt. Same with Jerry Jeudy, but they're still making do with guys like Noah Font. Former Chargers running back Melvin Gordon is still having a good time down there. Rookie Javonte Williams. I mean, they're finding ways to still score on offense. That defense is playing good enough ball as well to keep them at 3-0. I think the Broncos have played three teams that all have not won a game yet. So that's still, you know, kind of might be a mirage. But at the end of the day, I think they have a good chance. Let's put it this way. I think the Chargers have a good chance of winning the division. Topping the Chiefs in their first division game of the year is huge. I think it sets up for momentum really well. But you can't overlook a Raiders and Broncos team that are 3-0, because I don't care who you play. That's still kind of a hard thing to achieve. So I don't want to take them lightly, but I will say Chargers probably have a good shot at winning the division, especially if the Chiefs somehow continue to struggle, especially through the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of brought it up with like Teddy Bridgewater. One of the more, I think, surprising stats, if you look at, you know, the more advanced analytics and whatnot in the league right now, is two guys that are like tops of the charts of deep attempts are Teddy Bridgewater and Derek Carr, two guys that kind of have that stigma of being check down guys. So, I mean, like you said, even though the Broncos are played some weak teams, they're obviously, you know, playing out of their minds right now and playing really well. So definitely, like I said, I 100% agree with you. AFC West is probably the second best division, and I don't think it's that far behind the NFC West. So it's going to be fun down the stretch for sure. All right. So Justin Herbert obviously had a pretty good rookie season last year. So I'm just kind of curious, can you talk about what made him so special? And, you know, were you surprised to see him do so well? And I'm curious about what your expectations were heading into his rookie season. Cause I mean, didn't even come in as a starter and whatnot.
Yeah. So I'm always one of the first people to kind of not so much take the blame, but to own up to the fact that I wasn't high on Justin Herbert coming out. You know, I watched the top quarterbacks, which isn't something the Chargers, you know, when you cover the Chargers, you don't do all that often because Philip Rivers was a thing for quite some time. So this was really fun to actually look at quarterbacks and project whether or not, you know, one of these guys might actually end up with the Chargers. And I'll be honest, Burrow and Tua were above Herbert for me because just based on college film, which is all we had at the time, I thought Tua and Burrow looked much more just simply natural playing the quarterback position, just in terms of playing football, making certain throws, all types of throws off platform, off script, in system. It just looked like it was natural. The ball was coming out of their hands. It didn't matter if it was short, intermediate, deep. They just looked like they knew what they were doing. They knew how to contort their arm angles. They knew how to put the right touch on it. And for Herbert, I don't know how else to explain it other than it just looked like he was trying really hard to guide his passes at all times. I remember during the combine, which he just tested a little bit. I think he ran his 40 and that was it and through. But there were some like really short, you know, 5-yard hooks, curl slants and things that it looked like he was just trying too hard to aim instead of just kind of letting his arm do the work for him. And I just remember leading up to the draft, like, you know, I really hope Tua falls because I just thought he was going to be the guy, the best chance to probably end up with the Chargers and give him the best opportunity going forward in this post-Rivers era. But they ended up with Herbert. And then when that happened, you know, you switch to being cautiously optimistic, right? This guy's 6'6", 240, looks really good on paper, has a good college resume, and you just got to hope for the best. And again, no one could have foresaw that in week two, before they played the Chiefs, the defending Super Bowl champions, that at the time, that there was going to be a needle inserted into Tyrod Taylor's lung on accident. And all of a sudden, he's just thrown into the fire, right? And he takes the Chiefs to overtime. He has, I think, one touchdown passing, one rushing, and then he threw an interception, I think, later in the game that kind of helped the Chiefs take over. But it was a good performance for a kid who literally got thrown into the starting lineup 30 seconds before kickoff. And then as the season progressed, he went a couple games where he didn't throw more than one touchdown. He went a couple games where he kept throwing at least one interception. So you were kind of thinking, well, he's not, like, terrible. He's not throwing a bunch of picks or, like, costing them the game. But he would cost them, like, at the end of games, like against the Buccaneers, and I think against the Saints he threw a late pick as well. So it took him a little bit to get used to it, to kind of get the ball rolling. And then all of a sudden, Justin Herbert became Justin Herbert, right? The Saints game, he threw, I think, four touchdowns. And I think he was the first rookie since Mahomes. Before that, it was like Drew Brees, who threw for four touchdowns on Monday Night Football or something along those lines. I mean, he joined some group of right. those big names, and we all kind of seen how those guys turned out. And by the end of the year, of course, he breaks the rookie touchdown record. He's 39 yards away from breaking Andrew Luck's single-season record. Of course, he played one less game than Andrew Luck. He set a record for 300-yard passing games in a rookie season, a bunch of these things. And then one of the biggest things that he was really, really good at was completing passes under pressure. I think him and Russell Wilson were number one and two by the end of the year in terms of just like big time throws under pressure or something along those lines, right? Pro Football Focus had him right. as their highest graded quarterback under pressure, which is insane, again, for a rookie quarterback that a lot of people didn't have a high expectations for. So that's what made him successful as a rookie. Despite all the outside variables saying that he wasn't going to be successful, he kept being successful in spite of those things. And the big time throws under pressure type stuff is absolutely huge. And I think that's a good guiding light to show you what kind of, you know, what kind of success he's going to have in the future. Absolutely loved him by the end of the year, of course, but hindsight's, you know, 2020.
Yeah.
Right. Not high expectations, but by the end of the year, it just, he did what he did. And we just, accept that truth that he's good. He just actually is good.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you bring it up, like his college tape not looking like quite as great. And I remember, and I'm a big Oregon fan, so I love Justin Herbert, big fan of Justin Herbert and whatnot. It was a little disappointed to see him go to the Chargers, obviously. I have to face him twice a year. But I remember watching him in college and just getting so frustrated with their scheme. And, you know, cover your ears, Vegas Raider fans. Marcus Arroyo, who's now the head coach at UNLV, like, I just got so frustrated with his offense. And now Marcus Arroyo is like 0-10 at UNLV in his career and whatnot. And I saw someone point out, like, weird, you mean to tell me the guy who made who led to questions about Justin Herbert isn't having success in college football? And I feel like that played such a huge role. And I mean, we hear about it all the time with, you know, NFL draft prospects. So glad to see he's doing well, but I'm also not glad to see he's doing well and whatnot because they have to face him. But you brought it up, you know, one of the aspects of Herbert's game last year that you like kind of talked about was, you know, the rookie mistakes, right? He had that one big mistake, you know, especially down the stretch and in the fourth quarter games. And it sounds like he started to kind of, you know, correct that as the year went on. So I'm curious, have you seen that from him at all this year? Or is that something that you think he might've put in the past? Or is it something that maybe he's still kind of learning as he gets more experience?
You know, I was actually on the fence about something similar when I was thinking back to his first two games this year. And that it was similar to the start of his rookie season. Like I mentioned, he had like one touchdown and one pick in I think the first two or three games of his rookie season. And then this year he does the same thing, right? He throws, well, one interception, one touchdown against Washington. He had two picks and one touchdown against Dallas. And so all of a sudden you're like, ah, is this the sophomore slump, you know, that he's unfortunately like suffering from, that a lot of people thought would probably happen. A lot of people probably were hoping wouldn't happen as well. But I think the biggest difference was, as a rookie, those interceptions came in moments that like doomed the Chargers, right? They were in a 2-minute drill. You have to go down and score. You have to go down and kick a field goal to tie it or take the lead or something like that. And unfortunately, Herbert would throw a pick in those instances last year. This year, you know, the pick against Washington came earlier in the game where it really didn't do all that much in terms of affecting momentum. And then the same thing kind of goes with, you know, the Cowboys game. He threw two picks. One was weird and in the end zone, which was just really frustrating, of course. But by the end of it, you know, it was still a close game. Both teams had the chance to win it. The Chargers obviously had a touchdown taken off because of another illegal shift penalty, or else they probably would have walked away with that game because it took a last second field goal to break the tie and win it instead of the Chargers being up by, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 points or something along those lines because of points taken off from penalties. So, you know, I guess he's making some mistakes, but as you saw in the Chiefs game, he didn't make any mistakes, right? He was flawless, zero turnovers whatsoever, 4 touchdowns. So while he did look like he was kind of getting used to the new system in the first 2 weeks, they weren't like detrimental or as detrimental as they were last year. And so I would say right now, I think he's learned that lesson. He'll still take some bumps and bruises as a young quarterback, but I don't think it's anything, you know, a problem that you should worry about on a weekly basis.
Awesome. Well, I tell you what, let's move on to Herbert's weapons. And I got to ask, is Mike Williams taking over as the number one receiver down in Los Angeles? Because that guy's been on a tear this year.
Yeah, I, you know what? It's as big of a surprise to me as I think to anyone else. I was on the side that Mike Williams was not worth the $15 million roughly that he'd be getting paid this year on the final year of his contract. You know, I would have been fine if they gave him a new contract to kind of help spread the money around. But right now he's making more money, I believe, this year than guys like Stephon Diggs and DeAndre Hopkins are. I mean, obviously you look at his past 4 seasons, one of which his rookie season was, you know, non-existent because of injuries. You would say, no, this guy's not worth $15 million. You know, he just wasn't. But all of a sudden this offseason, we get Joe Lombardi, new offensive coordinator. And he says, look, Mike Williams is going to play the X receiver role, which is the same role that Michael Thomas did in the offense with Drew Brees. And so you're like, okay, so this probably is going to mean a big year for Mike Williams. But, you know, training camp, preseason comes and goes. He doesn't see any snaps in the preseason like most starters. But there's no noise about him from preseason. There's no like, hey, look at Mike Williams made this fantastic catch during training camp. Or, you know, he's just having the best camp of his life type of news that you see from a lot of good players. There was just none of that. It was all crickets. So when this year, you know, finally started and Washington game, you know, kicked off, there just weren't expectations. But all of a sudden, by far, best 3-game span, not only to begin, you know, one of his seasons, but of his career, right? I think it's 295 yards, 22 catches, I want to say, 4 touchdowns. And those are all top 6 or 5 in the NFL at this point, which are absolutely phenomenal. But it's just a 3-game sample size. No matter how good, I can't say he's taken over for Keenan Allen. You know, Keenan Allen is still a walking 10 and 100 yards every time he steps on a field. You know, that's just how it's going to be. I just think this Chargers coaching staff, this new one, has finally realized how to actually use Mike Williams because he's still, you know, a physical freak, and there was no reason why the only route he ran was a go, and then you just hope he catches the ball over another defensive back. Like, it's just not how you want to use a former first-round pick, right? That's just – nonsense at this point. But if I had to say anything, then he hasn't taken over for wide receiver 1. You know, maybe if he continues it through the whole year, maybe, but then he's not going to be on the Chargers team anymore because he'll probably sign a big deal somewhere else. So as of right now, Allen's still the guy, but Mike Williams is just finally kind of being the player we all thought he was going to be in the first round when they selected him back in 2017.
Yeah. Nothing quite like that contract year boost, right?
Exactly. Corey Davis all over again.
Yeah. So Keenan Allen, obviously you talked about him before, one of the best slot receivers in the NFL and has terrorized Raiders and really the league as a whole for years now. So I'm curious, if you were an opposing defensive coordinator, how would you try and slow that guy down? Is there
a way to slow him down? Man, that's really tough. I would say there is a way to slow him down. Okay, so everyone knows by now that Keenan Allen is not a speed guy. Simply put, like, he is not going to run by you. Just if you put him on a line with somebody else, you know, majority of the people are going to, in a straight line race, they will be Keenan Allen. He ran, I want to say, a 4.6 something in the 40. Exactly. Like, he was a little hurt. I remember there being a little bit of an injury bug, I think, with him at that point, but that's still pretty bad to have affected him. Like, if he was a 4.4 guy to run a 4.6, that's pretty, you know, damning at that point. But Keenan Allen, I think early on in his career, realized what type of receiver he was. He accepted the fact that he wasn't going to blaze past people, right? He's not a Henry Ruggs at any point, right? but what he realizes is that he has great footwork and he has a great mind for leverage and working blind spots and knowing how to set people up. And when you're able to do that, that will make you look a lot faster than you are because all of a sudden you're able to create separation that you normally wouldn't in a straight line race. So the best way I would, I guess, you know, try to mitigate Keenan Allen is you have to double this guy, I think it's simple as that. You have to double him. Again, it's a guy over the top, a guy underneath, a guy to his left and right. I don't care what the scheme is. You just have to allow him nowhere to go. You just cannot give him that open space. And why you don't see a lot of people probably doing that is because Mike Williams is on the other side of the field,
right?
Right. And the new Chargers system under Joe Lombardi is they're taking a lot of notes from the Saints system, 49er system with Shane Waldron, who's the quarterback's coach. Shane Waldron is with the Seahawks. Shane Day, they're taking notes from these different offenses that use a lot more enclosed, smaller formations where guys are much more bunched together near the line of scrimmage than spacing the whole field out. And what that does is it allows just better angles. It allows more room for your receivers and pass catchers to run away from people to create space. You know, you're working with bigger windows on the outside once everything's kind of set and done. So they're going to try to use that type of stuff, rub routes, right? Mesh concepts, ways to kind of create separation without speed. And again, best way to do it is you've got to be able to double team at the same time. That means having a guy be one-on-one with Mike Williams, a guy be one-on-one with Jared Cook, who still has a little bit of giddy up to him, and a guy, one-on-one with Austin Ekeler. It's just kind of a tough deal. I don't think many defenses can all honestly offer up a second guy to man Keenan Allen with another guy for the whole game.
Especially, like you said, with Mike Williams playing the way he has been and tearing up one-on-one covers. Don't want to leave that guy alone with the jump balls. Mm-hmm. Trayvon Mullen knows about that from a few years ago on that Thursday night football game. So, you mentioned Jared Cook, and I think probably one of the biggest losses for LA this year probably has to be Hunter Henry in the offseason. And obviously they replaced him with a former Raider and Jared Cook. So can you tell us about what they're missing with Henry and kind of how Cook's been doing filling in for his shoes?
Yeah. So, honestly, I wouldn't say that, at least thus far, that Hunter Henry going to New England, that loss, has really affected the Chargers all that much. Mm-hmm. And I want to say because in past years with Phillip Rivers and obviously Justin Herbert's rookie season, people think Hunter Henry was much more of a vertical threat than he really was. And honestly, I think he probably was more of a vertical threat before he got injured, right? He in 2018, right? He lost the whole year to a torn ACL. 2019, he lost, I believe, it was at least a handful of games with a tibia plateau fracture, again, lower leg injury. And he just never seemed to be a guy who could really create, again, space down the field. But he was a good enough route runner, and he had really good hands that you can make, contested catches in traffic and stuff like that. So he was a sure-handed guy to look for, on second and short, third and short type of downs where you got to have it. But honestly, I think with Herbert's skill set, that we want to be throwing the ball down the field. And that's something Brandon Staley said when he first hired as well in one of the first team meetings, is that they do want to throw the football down the field. And I think Jared Cook is just a much better tight end with a skill set that fits this offense and what they want to do. And I think he's shown up quite a bit. He had a touchdown against the Cowboys that was unfortunately taken back with one of the illegal shift penalties. But the guy's done enough. I think he's had one, maybe two drops, which aren't the worst things in the world, or at the moment they were not. He's made tough catches. He's converted some good third downs for us. So he's just done the job he's needed to. And in all honesty, again, I don't think the difference between him and what Hunter Henry might be doing for us is really all that big of a difference.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Like when I was putting that question together, I'm like, well, how big of a loss is it? Because Hunter Henry was, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he might have missed more games than he actually played in for the Chargers. So I feel like it's like, how do you lose what you never really had? So
definitely. Yeah, I'd say he missed probably like a third. I think he was with us for 4 years. He missed a full season. He missed maybe another half of one. So it was probably between roughly around a third of the time with the Chargers. He was not on the field.
Yeah, for sure. And then Austin Ekeler, I think everyone kind of knows at this point, one of the best receiving backs in the NFL. But can you talk about what he brings as a runner? And then I'm just kind of curious, when the Chargers need a yard or in their red zone situation, is it Ekeler that they're going to, or is there maybe someone else that's getting the rock?
Yeah, man, Austin Ekeler is just fantastic. I almost feel nostalgic thinking back to when he came in, and he was number three initially. That's what Phillip Rivers called him, was number three when he was still trying to make the team during that preseason. And this guy just did it all on special teams, just worked his tail off. And it's kind of like, the story we all want to hear and read about, this feel-good story. This kid from nowhere, Colorado, Western State, Colorado Division II school, makes the NFL, earns a new contract, becomes a starting running back, one of the 32 starting running backs in the NFL. I mean, it's crazy. And it's weird because I like Melvin Gordon was good, but for whatever reason, we were always just like, when Eckler's on the field, he just looks like he's able to do more and make something out of nothing more often than not than Melvin Gordon ever did. Melvin Gordon could pop some big runs. He's done some of those for the Broncos the last, you know, year or so. And we had some good years with Melvin Gordon, although he had a highly skewed amount of carries within the 5 yard line, scored a lot of touchdowns for us, but we were always just like, Eckler just seems to bring something else. And I think his versatility as a guy who can run between the tackles, he's shown that. It's just, this is not a running football team, honestly. It's not the best running football team, but when we do get in a groove, you know, it's not too bad. We just like throwing the ball a little too much. And Austin Eckler can simply just go line out wide, can run routes out of the backfield, can line up in the slot. I mean, he can do all these things for us. So like, he's just going to be an overall offensive weapon. And I think that's what you want in the NFL these days. I mean, you look at Alvin Kamara with the Saints, of course, Joe Lombardi's, you know, history there. Like, that's kind of how they're treating Austin Eckler. And I think, you know, 1,000 yards rushing is never going to be his thing, but well over 1,000 yards total is going to be his thing, right? And he's probably going to skew more towards receiving yards than rushing yards. Either way, you know, 1,400, 1,500 yards of offense is still really good. I don't care what position you play, right? He's just fantastic. And as a leader and as a person, I've got to talk to him several times now. He's as good of a guy on the field as he is off of it. So just in terms of a guy you want on your football team, like just in general, he's one of those guys.
Awesome. So I'm curious, I think you might've touched on it a little bit, but in the red zone or whatnot and short yardage, is it, are the Chargers going with still with the passing attack, or is there a guy that they have as like kind of their battering ram, if you will?
Yeah. Apologies. You did ask that first. Austin Eckler. Yeah. He's going to be the goal line guy. You know, they drafted Larry Roundtree, who is a bigger back out of Missouri in the sixth round this past draft. And he's been just fine now. He had a big 12-yard something run against Washington. People were like, oh, yeah, like he already won the running back 2 job, right? He's already seen more snaps than Justin Jackson. And that's not the biggest surprise because Justin Jackson's hurt all the time, unfortunately. But over the last 2 games, I think Roundtree's averaging like 2.2 yards per carry. I mean, it's not looking too good. It's not like he's getting a ton of chances. But Austin Eckler is still pound for pound, probably one of the strongest guys on the entire team. So there's really no reason not to play him near the goal line. He needs to make better decisions because he's lost a few fumbles down there by trying to jump over piles. He just needs to keep the ball on the ground and plow through guys. And especially with this new and improved offensive line, this is the best chance he has to be able to do that. So, yeah, Eckler is going to be the guy on the goal line. You'll still see this team throw quite a bit in the red zone. But if there's going to be a guy to tote the rock inside the 5, that will be Eckler.
Gotcha. So I'm curious, whatever happened with Josh Kelly, because there was like 3 weeks where he looked like he was going to be the next guy last season, then kind of just fell off the cliff.
Yeah. So, and I'm going to preface this with, I love Joshua Kelly as a person. He is fantastic. He's got one of the most infectious smiles you'll ever see. I love talking to the guy. He just brings such good energy to really any room that he's in. But kind of touched on like advanced analytics and things like that. So he was, I think if you take any salt into like EPA or any of those things, just in terms of like expected points per attempt and things like that, Joshua Kelly was the worst. He was the most inefficient back in the NFL out of, you know, however many, I think at least 100 carries or something like that. So you're looking at probably, you know, 40, 50, maybe even 60 out of 60 running backs who had at least 100 carries or something close to that. Last season, he was by far the worst. He caught all of his targets, 23 of 23, which is like fine. It was for like 150 something yards, which is, again, fine. It's a good stat to have. But when you're averaging around 3 yards carry, and basically when he got his chances, nothing happened. It was just running into a wall every single time. Yes, the offensive line was not good. But then you saw in the preseason this year when he did play with some of the starting offensive linemen, and he's a better line than he did last year. Just nothing. And then you saw Larry Roundtree, you know, lead the first preseason game in rushing. Larry Roundtree, just in the same circumstances, the same players blocking for him, what have you, just did a lot more, made a lot more out of it than Joshua Kelly. And it's just really unfortunate. Joshua Kelly is a one-cut runner, but it seems like there just has to be the hole for him. You know, he can't make anything out of nothing. He's not juking anybody. He doesn't have any wiggle. If the line's all bogged up, he's probably not going anywhere. So long story short, it's just in terms of skill sets that you need to succeed and are more translatable to the NFL, Josh Kelly, unfortunately, just doesn't have as much of those skills as a guy like Roundtree.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Well, offensive line's kind of been an issue for the Chargers for a few years now. And probably this past season and the offseason before, they've made quite a few changes. So how do you think those moves have paid off, and has the position group become almost a strength of the team?
Yeah. So obviously they replaced 4 or 5 starters from last year's offensive line. One of the worst in the NFL. The Chargers offensive line usually is one of the worst lines in the league year in and year out. But they went out, they signed Corey Linsley. I believe he's still the highest paid center in the NFL. Brian Bulaga has already been out for 2.5 games. Unfortunately, that's kind of what you get with Brian Bulaga, unfortunately. Yeah. We both went to the University of Iowa, so I'm a big fan of Bulaga's. I just know that he's just older. He's not going to get a lot of starts year in and year out. More than likely, he's going to miss some games. So, but you added Matt Filer, who's very underrated as a guard with the Steelers, one of the best free agent pickups, I believe, value-wise this past season. Ode Abushi, a guy who's a little bit of a journeyman, but at the same time, he was playing probably his best ball with the Detroit Lions at the end of last year. So when the Chargers picked him up, I think they just got him at a really good point in his career. And while he hasn't been like bad by any means this year, he's not been over the top good. He's just getting his job done. And honestly, that's kind of a low bar that the Chargers offensive line has had. You know, as long as you're not screwing up, you're not allowing a ton of pressures, you're not getting a bunch of penalties, then you're going to play for this team. You're probably going to start and probably have a good time. So, this offensive line is so much better. Rashawn Slater, in terms of his stats, you know, pressures allowed, run in terms of yards made while running to his side, all those types of things. I believe they're some of the tops among rookie offensive linemen. I think, honestly, he's second in a lot of those categories behind Detroit's Penei Sewell, who luckily went from right to left tackle due to an injury for the Lions and is playing as well as we all expected him to be as well. So, yeah, overall, me and everyone else who watches the Chargers are probably just super stoked that this offensive line is fixed. And we can finally watch, like, let's just put it this way. It's watchable football now with that offensive line. You know, it's not every week they come out and embarrass themselves. This is watchable, good football. And a lot of it has to do with that offensive line being much better this year.
Definitely. Well, you mentioned Brian Bulaga being on injured reserve. So who fills in for him? Is that a potential weak spot for the Chargers up front?
Yeah, I would definitely say it's a weak spot because the Chargers are not deep at tackle. They paid the money. They got the guys to have a good starting offensive line. Unfortunately, I can't say the position or any of the positions up front are really deep by any means. So right now, at right tackle, you've got Storm Norton. Now, if you watch the XFL at all, he played for the Los Angeles Wildcats for that abbreviated season. He was actually rated by Pro Football Focus as the highest or just and simply the best graded offensive lineman from the entire shortened XFL season. Which was cool to see. I mean, he's got great height at 6'8". He's around 3'10", I want to say. He's a little, like, lean. He's not as brutish through, you know, the upper body as you would like for a tackle. But, you know, length is still something that defensive linemen have to get around and figure that out. But it's a weakness because if you just watch the Cowboys game, I think Micah Parsons had 11 pressures rushing against Storm Norton. And I think the Chargers allowed 14 pressures total that game. So 11 of 14 is a heck of a number. And Michael Parsons is an incredible athlete, but he hasn't played defensive end since high school. And he's pass rushed, you know, from linebacker alignments and the A-gaps and stuff like that. But a guy who literally hasn't played the position in years just lines up for, you know, in his second NFL game and does that well, does have a sack against you. Yes, that's going to be an issue. And hopefully Brian Bulaga is back from his stint on IR sometime soon.
Yeah, I mean, Micah Parsons, I think they said he found out he's playing defensive end on, like, Thursday, right? So not exactly a comforting sign, but good to hear from our perspective. But so how do you think L.A.'s offensive line and Las Vegas' pass rush, which has been pretty good so far, stack up against each other? And is there a particular matchup that you're worried about? Sounds like it might be Storm Norton.
Yeah, I would definitely point at that as well. I think if I remember who rushes where, I don't know if you guys, you flip Crosby and Ngakoue all
Crosby's usually on the offense's right, going against the right tackle. But yeah, they do kind of flip flop a little bit. So, but yeah, it's normally Crosby with him and Young there.
So let's just put it this way. It's whoever lines up on Storm Norton is going to be the matchup that you're going to have to look for. I think Rashawn Slater is solid. He's not a world beater immediately. He's not like a Quentin Nelson comes into the NFL and just kicks everyone's hind ends, you know, from the very beginning. But Crosby looks really good this year. And Ngakoue, no matter how many times he changes teams for some reason, he's still also good. You know, people forget about him being a part of that Saxonville defense however many years ago. That's the biggest thing. You know, I think your defensive tackles are what, Jonathan Hankins and guys like that. I can't think of the names off the top of my head, but if you have
Jefferson.
Yeah, I don't know if Quentin Jefferson's so much of a Solomon Thomas as well. I don't know if he's feeling or looking rejuvenated in Las Vegas, but I mean against Odiabushi, maybe you might have some wins with some interior pass rush. But yeah, well, it's that right tackle position, whoever's going up against him, that's the biggest issue.
Yeah, I think Jefferson's been a good pass rusher, which has kind of been his MO, you know, his entire career. But there have definitely been some moments against the run, like. There was one play that stood out to me last week on Malcolm Brown's touchdown run for the Dolphins last week, where he got literally put on his ass, like by the offensive lineman. I think he ended up rolling into KJ Wright too, and might have even injured KJ Wright. And then Solomon Thomas has actually kind of been the biggest surprise. I think he's got like 2.5 sacks right now, which is like already matches his career high for a season. Kind of had a little bit of a resurgence, like you're talking about, but definitely nothing where I would sit there and, you know, be pounding the table for Solomon Thomas to be an impact player for this game. So definitely think of you're right. The Crosby and the Storm Norton matchup, or whoever is on Storm Norton, should be a interesting one to watch. But let's switch gears to the other side of the ball. And, you know, we're already talking about pass rushers. So let's start things off with Joey Bosa. I'm curious. So what's your favorite trait of his? Because I have mine and I'm curious if it's the same.
Favorite trait of Joey Bosa? If we're talking traits in general, he's got a heck of a personality. But I'm sure we're talking football. Honestly, he's obviously got such a strong motor. And I think Brandon Staley was quick to point that out in the win over Kansas City, where he said Joey Bosa exhibited this warrior spirit that you need to take down really good teams. And Joey Bosa came into this game against the Chiefs dealing with two different injuries. I mean, foot and ankle. I mean, just hard, you know, hurting one side of his, you know, legs, essentially his lower body, that badly, where he was really playing quite a few, like, just limited snaps against the Chiefs. But down the stretch, you know, I don't think he came out all that much. And it's because they needed to keep getting after Patrick Mahomes. And Bosa is just, he's just an animal. He's a different breed. He's able to fight through all this pain. Last year was so tough seeing him miss, you know, quite a bit of time because he had like three different injuries, one upper body, two lower body. And no matter what, he finds a way to fight through it and to make an impact. And you know, he doesn't sack Patrick Mahomes all that much. They play twice a year. I don't know how many years in a row now. But that was only his second sack on Mahomes on Sunday. And you just got a feel for the guy finally being able to chase down this quarterback who not a lot of people can actually take down. So just in terms of his motor, his effort, his mindset, I guess, at continuing to compete, even though he may not be seeing the results like on paper, I think it is just absolutely phenomenal. He's just exactly the type of player you want on a defense.
Yeah, I think for me, like everything you said, I completely agree with. I really like Joey Bosa a lot. I mean, I like Nick Bosa too. The Bosa family, you know, that's the family of NFL pass rushers, right? But I think for me, the thing that's most impressive about him is just his use of hands. Like, he's just like a ninja out there, just swiping people, getting tackles off balance. And that's one of the things I love watching pass rushers. I was a D lineman in college, so I always love seeing those guys that are really good at doing little things like the hand fighting. But I mean, like you said, there's no shortage of compliments to hand out when it comes to Joey Bosa. So is there any particular type of blocker or any sort of scheme that has given him trouble in the past or anything like that? Like, I'm just trying to find some sort of weakness in this dude's game.
Yeah. So he, like you said, real good with his hands. He loves double swipes. And if anything, I would say if you just keep him brushing outside, as in keeping him taking the longest way to the quarterback over and over and over again, probably the easiest way you're going to be able to wear him down. I don't think he counters inside all that much. Like, yes, it's part of his repertoire,
gotcha.
But he doesn't have like a big spin move like Melvin Ingram does, or you know, something like that. He wants to run the hoop, and an easy way to do that is with the hand swipe to catch the offensive lineman off guard, knock his hands away, and finish that way. So in terms of an offense where you make him do that, that'll tire him out. An offense where your quarterback's always kind of stepping up. If you got a good interior offensive linemen that are able to kind of keep that pocket, that bubble open for a quarterback to step up in, it's just an absolute pain. You run certain plays like designed rollouts and sprint outs where you're going the opposite direction of Joey Bosa. So he like thinks for a split second, all right, I'm going to go sack the quarterback. And then, you know, he looks up and realizes the quarterback's literally taking off in the other direction. And that's just demoralizing. You keep doing that again, you're going to make him feel like that he's just not doing anything. And I think even if it's Joey Bosa or any other defensive player, if you just make them feel like constantly, like they don't have a chance of even affecting the game whatsoever. And then I just think, again, you're going to demoralize the guy, you know, before the game's over.
Gotcha. So outside of Bosa, who we've obviously talked a lot about, is there a pass rusher that the Raider fans should be worried about on the Chargers, especially on the interior? Because that's the weak spot of the Raiders offensive line right now, for sure.
Well, I would tell Raiders fans that you don't have a ton to be worried about when it comes to the Chargers interior pass rush. You know, 2 years ago, they drafted Jerry Tillery, who had 8.5 sacks coming out of Notre Dame as a pass rushing defensive tackle. And when they drafted him, you know, he was really highly regarded, graded by Pro Football Focus. Again, 6'7", 300 pounds, like looked really good on paper as well, tested very well despite coming back from a labrum surgery he had late in the season. But through the first, you know, going, this is his third season now, Jerry Tillery consistently grades out near the bottom of all defensive tackles. I'm talking, you know, I think as a rookie, he was second to last. Through two games this year, he was, I think, third to last again. There's something not clicking with Jerry Tillery, even though we've seen some flashes where this guy looks every bit of the part that you thought you would be getting in the first round. And so the best way I can say it is he's tall. You're able to get under him. If your interior of the defensive line or offensive line, has low center of gravity, staying under his shoulder pads, I think it's an easy way to mitigate him. He's not the strongest guy in the world either, despite, you know, maybe initially thinking he was. He just can't push guys around. And I think offensive linemen naturally have better leverage against him in the first place. So Linval Joseph is on the wrong side of 30, of course, a couple of years over that. He's right. Not going to really provide too much of a pass rush. Justin Jones has been hurt. I'm not sure if he was put on IR or not. But again, besides them, Christian Covington, not so much of a pass rusher. Mm-hmm. I think if you think your interior offensive line is a weak spot, this is a week where that's going to probably be okay.
Good to hear. Yeah, I have to tell myself a little bit. I was a huge Jerry Tillery guy coming out of the draft. I was big on him. I watched his game against Stanford in college where he had like 4 sacks on the interior. And I looking back on it now, I put way too much weight in that game. But yeah, it's been disappointing, at least for me, you know, and I'm sure Charger fans and yourself as well, to not see that guy kind of be the player that I once thought he would be. But on the second level, I got to thank you a little bit, because Los Angeles decided to let Denzel Perryman walk this offseason, and eventually made his way to Las Vegas. And he's been probably the Raiders' best linebacker so far. He's been amazing for him. So I'm curious, are the Chargers, are they missing Perryman in the middle? And then I've also kind of noticed, you know, with Brandon Staley's scheme, it doesn't seem like they're using too many linebackers nowadays, and which was something he did with the Rams. So I'm curious about the impact of that loss and what the state of the Chargers linebackers is right now.
Yeah, that's a tough question, because you can say, you know, if Perryman is, which he is playing well, correct? Like compared to the Chargers linebackers of Kenneth Murray and Kaiser Dwight, who have been fine, if not maybe a little underwhelming, it's easy to say, yeah, we shouldn't have let go of Denzel Perryman, but that's not, you know, that needs more context. The context is that Perryman was hurt all the time. He did not last long whatsoever. I don't think he had a single year where he started all 16 games. I think his career high was 12 games before, at least in starts. I think he played in 15 games once, but he only had 6 starts as a rotational guy. So, you know, as great as he's playing for you guys, he's just, maybe he wouldn't be doing the same with us. You know, and yes, Brandon Staley is running, you know, this base 3-4 defense, where essentially he's actually only running 2 middle linebackers, because he's got, you know, a nickel cornerback in there for most of the time. And excuse me. Yes, 3-4 defense, excuse me. Okay. But yeah, so guys like, I'm getting all mixed up here with defensive fronts, but Murray and Kaiser White are super athletic, and so is Drew Tranquil. And I think what we've realized through the first couple games is that Kenneth Murray, as you know, differing opinions that he had coming out of the draft, whether he was a first-round talent or not, at least athletically, yes, very much so. But at least through two games of his sophomore season, three games of sophomore season, they're noticing that he still has some problems with like dissecting fronts in front of him, dissecting plays, digging through the trash, as I like to call it. He gets swamped by offensive linemen a little too much for my liking. Kaiser White as well, super athletic, kind of gets bogged down in the run game, has trouble covering, you know, some of the more elite running backs and tight ends in the game, unfortunately, even though he's a former safety. And one guy I'll point out again, Drew Tranquil, he played a season high 34 snaps against the Chiefs. And instantaneously, like, got on the field, and one or two plays later has a sack. You know, within the first couple of plays, has another really big play where he chases Mahomes, you know, around the corner for a one-yard gain where Mahomes usually scampers for 7-8 yards. You know, so I think they're kind of figuring out that Drew Tranquil needs to have more snaps, and Kenneth Murray, who played a season low, I think 40 snaps against the Chiefs, may not be seeing as much time in the middle as he has been. So it's a little underwhelming, but that's a long-winded answer to say that it's tough to say we missed Denzel Perryman because he simply just wasn't available, right, and the Chargers are doing what they can now with who they have.
Gotcha. So you're saying it might be more of a – sorry, I forgot the other guy's name – and Tranquil rather than Kenneth Murray on Monday?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you right now that I believe Kenneth Murray and Kaiser White will start on Monday. But I guarantee you probably see a lot more Drew Tranquil as the game goes on. He's so good on special teams, and I think that's a big reason why he hasn't been a starter nor playing a lot of defensive snaps, because he's been a big reason why the special teams has improved from last year, because he was hurt all of last year. But this was a guy who blocked two punts as a rookie, you know. Gotcha. He has the talent on special teams, and if that means sacrificing his – you know, time on defense to make special teams that much better, I think that's just something that Brandon Staley thought was more vital to this team's success in the current moment, you know, than Anthony Lynn ever did in the past few years.
Gotcha. Because he's been there for a while. I remember seeing him around for the Chargers for a few years now, huh?
Tranquil?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is his third year, but he missed all of last year. Gotcha. Like the seventh defensive snap, lineman fell on him and it broke his ankle. So we didn't get to see him at all last season. Yep.
Gotcha. Well, let's pivot to the secondary. And I have to thank you again, because Casey Hayward has been excellent for the Raiders this last season. So I'm curious, why did the Chargers, you know, end up getting rid of him, and who's his replacement been this season?
Yeah, this is another thing where it's, again, quite a surprise, because Casey Hayward for the Chargers last season specifically did not look anything like the Casey Hayward that we saw, you know, years before, and the Casey Hayward we see now. You know, coincidentally, one of the games that I would point to last season is, I think, the first time the Chargers played the Raiders. And that was a game, yes, where Casey Hayward struggled and was abused by guys like Hunter Renfrow. Mm-hmm. And I believe Nelson Aguilar, who was with the team last, yep, year, also caught a long touchdown on him. So Casey has never been a speed guy. He's always just kind of one with his, you know, his mind, just being smarter than the guy in front of him, knowing his limitations and knowing how to win despite, you know, maybe being a little longer in the tooth. So that's just what he did. But the NFL seemed to be, I guess, running by him per se, you, gotcha, know, no pun intended, but that's exactly what was happening. And in Gus Bradley's defense, we all felt that he needed like really elite, smart athletes at certain positions to make his defense go, which is why I think when Derwin James was healthy in 2018, that defense looked a lot better, because he was able to do quite a few things. And I think that masked a lot of the downsides to some of the guys on the outside who were getting older or a little bit slower, you know. But last season, you know, Derwin, again, was out. Melvin Ingram missed a lot of games. The pass rush wasn't there to help out the secondary. And I think that's big with a Gus Bradley defense. You're seeing the, yes, pass rush with Ngakoue, Crosby, and those guys. They're getting at the quarterbacks and inherently helping out the secondary. And that's just not what was happening last year. And I just would tell you right now that I don't think the Chargers had the pass rush last year to help out guys like Casey Hayward and stuff like that. And obviously they got rid of Desmond King, who was a former All-Pro as a rookie. Like, it was just kind of ridiculous, or as a second-year player, I think it was. So, you know, we love Casey, love him. It wasn't working out for the Chargers. And he unfortunately was, you know, allowing career highs and yardages and catches and stuff per game. And at that point, you just got to cut bait and say, it's just, It's just not working, at least now, with us.
Gotcha. So I'm curious, who's kind of filled in for Hayward in this, as the number two corner? Or
yeah, so I would say, you know, this is a tough one in terms of like cornerback one, two, because Chris Harris has been out for a couple games now. Mike Davis, who was signed to an extension, has been fine. But I would say, you know, he's actually now probably cornerback two behind Asante Samuel Jr., right? Asante Samuel has two picks through the last two games, made a spectacular diving interception to the first turnover of Mahomes, you know, on Sunday, and looks every bit a part of, you know, like he's his father's son, right? This guy is a ball hawk. He's just, you know, he's a competitor. He's so smart. He just wants to take the ball away. He's going to do everything that he can to make that happen. And he's done that. So I would say Asante Samuel Jr. right now is far and away going to be this team's cornerback one. And if Michael Davis can kind of reel it back in, because I think he's leading the team in yards allowed in coverage, which obviously is not a good thing. While it's not like a lot, but 60 yards per game is still not where you want to be for a good corner. So if he can kind of reel it back in, then I think the secondary is going to look even better. But yeah, as of right now, Asante Samuel Jr., he's seriously the real deal.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, I remember watching him coming out, cause I'm a big draft nut, if you can't tell by now, but, and him coming out, and I was actually talking to somebody else and they had the stats pulled up and they were like, he was the best cover six corner in the country last year. And then no one ran more cover six than Brandon Staley's Rams last year. So ended up being one hell of a fit and was definitely something that, I think, the Chargers might've struck gold there in the second round. But yep. So you mentioned Chris Harris missing the last 2 weeks. So what's the likelihood that'll play on Monday? I'm not even sure what his injury is, honestly, at this point. And, you know, who's his kind of replacement? Who would his replacement be?
Yeah, so the Chris Harris injury was weird because he wasn't – like, he didn't go out again in the Washington game, right? There wasn't like, oh, Chris Harris went to the locker room. Oh, he's, you know, questionable to return or anything like that. He played the whole game. He was celebrating in post-game videos and stuff like that. But then, you know, the week came preparing for the Cowboys – and he like didn't practice at all. And then they said, you know, he's just out. And then the same thing this past week, he didn't practice at all. And it's a shoulder injury, by the way. So
gotcha.
An upper body injury, but like there was no look into severity or anything like that. It's just a shoulder injury. And he just said, you know, I think it wasn't too serious, but and that's something I should probably point out as well. With the injury history of the Chargers, Brandon Staley's well aware of that and wants to do you know, anything he can to not be that oft injured team anymore. So they're going to be over cautious. And, you know, while it's a mystery, it must be severe enough. And so I hope he plays this week. It'd be nice to kind of get more of our complete defense back. Mm-hmm. But if he doesn't, Tavon Campbell is going to start there. Tavon Campbell is a former undrafted free agent of the Jets. I want to say back in 2017, he played in the Canadian Football League for a bit. And has since developed into just like a nice complementary rotational defensive back for the Chargers. He can play inside, outside. I think his agility is much better suited on the inside to play that slot corner role. And he forced two fumbles. The two forced fumbles that we recovered against the Chiefs were from Tavon Campbell. So he had a heck of a game last week. And hopefully he's able to do, you know, a little more again this week if Chris Harris doesn't play. Still expect to see him if Chris Harris does play, but just obviously not starting. But overall, yeah, hope Chris can go. But if not, Campbell's the guy.
Awesome. So Derwin James, is that guy truly positionless? Because I swear to God, every time I watch him, he's on a different spot on my screen.
Yeah. You know, I think he's the best himself. He says, you can put me at any position besides nose tackle and I will do it. And I will play it to my heart's content. And I will, you know, try the best that I can and probably still succeed. Right. As a rookie, he had 3.5 sacks, which tied the rookie record for a defensive back. What was funny is that the year before, Desmond King did the same thing, had 3.5 sacks, which set the record. So both of them are tied for the NFL record for rookie defensive backs in terms of sacks, which is a weird stat to even keep track of. But
yeah,
he's positionless, man. I'll tell you what, he is the play caller on this defense. He wears the green dot, same way that John Johnson wore it for the Rams last year underneath Staley. Derwin James is the guy. He's the one talking to Staley the entire game, making sure everyone's lined up. And obviously he's done quite a good job, especially this past Sunday against, you know, the Chiefs. 24 points is a good number to hold the Chiefs to. If you can hold the Chiefs to 24 or less points, I think you got a pretty good chance to win. And
turn them over, what, three or four times?
Four times. Derwin James has yet to actually have a turnover himself, but if he's able to play the way he's playing and make it so other teammates are able to have the opportunities to make these turnovers, then that's still a successful defense.
So I'm curious, do you think he's going to be charged with matched up with Darren Waller, or is there going to be a different approach to slow down Waller?
I think you've got like Henry Ruggs is fast. He's still a threat down the field. At the same time, he's not necessarily Tyreek Hill, where it's, you know, at any point, no matter which route he runs, he's potentially going to take it to the house, at least not yet. To me, that allows Derwin James to, I think, focus on Darren Waller a lot more. I think in terms of the tendencies of the Raiders, it's like Derek Carr's going to throw the ball at Darren Waller. I think recently he had a game where the game after, or at least this past Sunday, like he didn't have that many targets or something, at least in the first half, it was weird. But I think that has to be the matchup. I think that's where Derwin James has to stay, because if there's anywhere that I believe they will hurt the Chargers the most, it is going to be through Darren Waller, because if it's not Derwin James guarding him, it's going to be someone like Kenneth Murray or Kaiser White, who just are troublesome in coverage this year. They just don't have like the, I don't know, just like they have the will to do it. They just don't have like the experience. Kaiser White, while he was a safety, it just hasn't seemed to translate as well. Kenneth Murray did not cover anybody but running backs in college. I talked to his linebacker coach last year after he was drafted. He literally was just covered in the flats, or he went after the quarterback. Yeah. You know, it was just, it wasn't really anything in between. So Waller is going to be, I think, the reason the Raiders win. And if the Chargers don't want that to happen, they have to limit Waller. And I think Derwin James is the best option there.
Awesome. So I just want to wrap things up by talking about the Chargers' new head coach, who you've kind of had a lot of really good things to say about today. So I'm curious, what's been your thoughts on Brandon Staley so far? Because, I mean, I've been really impressed with the guy just in the way he talks to like the media and whatnot. And he speaks in this press conference. He always seems like he's, you know, confident and whatnot, and like he's really got the right ship. So what are your thoughts on Brandon Staley through three games so far?
Honestly, I just think he's the real deal. Genuinely, yeah. Like just no BS. He is everything that you want in like a modern day NFL coach. You know, I think he's learned from a lot of the old school guys, and he's taken from them what he believes to still be worthwhile and important in today's NFL. But he's also, and one of my favorite phrases that he says is like, we're going to tell the truth. Like after the Chiefs game, he said, you know, we're going to watch this film. We're going to tell the truth, learn from it, and move on. And by that, he meant that, you know, we won this game. So there's going to be good on this tape. But at the same time, there's still plenty of bad, and we're going to unpack it. We're going to tell the truth about it. Like if it was bad, it was bad. And we're going to admit that it's something that we need to fix. It's something we need to work on and clean up before next week. And so he just wants to hold everybody accountable for the responsibility. And I think that's absolutely huge. He's also analytics based. He is immediately when he was hired, he went out and grabbed this guy named Cody Sejeda from Northwestern, who was essentially the right-hand man to their coach Fitzgerald. And he's in essentially the same role here with the Chargers. He's like the assistant to the head coach. And so his job is to essentially run analytics and at least be in his ear about, I think he's the guy that says, you know what, here are the chances on like this fourth down situation. Here are the numbers based on like whether we're going to get it or not, passing or running, like what are we going to do here? And he just helps kind of make some of those game management decisions. And I think that's absolutely phenomenal going from a guy like Anthony Lynn, who was so stuck in his ways that, you know, the entire country by the end of the season was like, stop running on first down. And then if you don't go anywhere on first down, quit running it again. Like quit making your quarterback, your first round quarterback rookie throw out of third and eight, third and 10 all the time, you know? So that's been the biggest refreshing thing. He's just modern, forward thinking, progressive in terms of sports science, analytics, what have you. If there's an edge that he can get on any football team that he's about to play, if there's any edge he can give his team, whether it's physically, mentally, what have you, he's going to do it. And then you saw against the Chiefs where he's like aggressive. And he said in this press conference that, you know, we're going to be aggressive, but we're not going to be reckless. You know, I'm not just going for it on fourth and 13 on our side of the field because I want to go down and score, you know, with a minute into the second quarter. No, this is like a drive where if we don't score here, it may severely lower our chances because the Chiefs are going to go down and put up seven when we just put up three and all the kind of shift that momentum. No, I'm going to like, we're going to risk it, you know, to get the biscuit, go down, score seven. So now the Chiefs are looking at a 10 spot down instead of being, you know, six or seven or what have you. Like, it's just, he's playing that game really well. And I think he's doing a great job in balancing again, the aggressiveness of those calls without being in his words, reckless.
One follow-up. Is it nice to have a coach that understands clock management?
Well, I'll tell you what. Yes. And it's a big freaking deal when you go from a coach who also had no idea in terms of clock management, because a lot of these, like, you don't know what you just saw because of how stupid it was, like ending to a game. How many times the Chargers experienced that with Anthony Lynn and even Mike McCoy and all these coaches from before. To have a coach who isn't just like, I'm going to be on top of it because I'm the head coach, it's my responsibility. He was like, no, I'm going to like try my best, but I'm also going to hire somebody to literally be in my ear for these situations to make sure that I'm not making a mistake. And I think that's a humble thing to do. That's for him to, you know, decide that as smart as I think I am, I'm just like everybody else and could use some help. And so awesome. For me not to like put all the, you know, pressure on me to have someone in my ear, I think is absolutely fantastic.
Well, I tell you what, I walked into this podcast being a big Brandt Staley guy, and I'm an even bigger one here. Just hearing you talk about him.
As you
I
love should. Him. Yeah.
I mean, I love hearing about the guys who are like, who are, aren't so stubborn that they, that it has to be their own way or they has to be their idea, that they're willing to take in ideas from other people. So awesome to hear. Unfortunately, he's with the Chargers, but good for you guys. So, well, Michael, I appreciate you coming on. Appreciate you spending your time with us. Tell me where can the people find you?
Yeah, I mean, Raiders fans, if you care to follow somebody who covers the Chargers, I mean, it's never a bad thing to kind of get to know the enemy and what's going on
exactly
in the fan base that you're playing twice a year. So on Twitter, you can find me at Zone Tracks. That's spelled ZoneTracks. Obviously, the sister site to Silver and Black Pride for the Chargers is boltsfromtheblue.com. We like to have fun there. We're, you know, these last few years, we've been trying to really grow the community in general at SB Nation. So whether, you know, you're a fan of a different team or not, just like making so our communities kind of are intertwined and getting to know each other and like just in general, making football, this game we love so much, even more fun, more interactive, is, you know, something we're trying to do. So if you guys want to follow me there, you can do it.
Like you said it, man, we're all football fans here and it always helps to know what's going on to the other side, especially when you got to play them twice a year. But all right, you guys know where to follow me at mholder95, at Silver and Black Pride and whatnot. Other than that, until next week, guys.